someone else has already said it best.
This is the best
of me.
The best ones aren't as good as you probably think they are.
What is best in life?
I did the best I could.
Doing my best.
Best.
Yes, hello, and welcome to Best of the Best podcast with myself, Connor Keyes. As always, alongside me in my cell, Mr. Ronan Mullen.
Ronan Emmett Mullen?
Ronan Emmett Mullen, yes, sorry, Jesus. I fell. Prisoner number 92628.
69.
We are here with the one and only Oz, the HBO, probably starter.
They
kicked them off, like, didn't it?
This and Sex and the City, apparently.
Yeah, the two of them were sort of with.
Although I'd say this one would have been a harder sell.
Yeah, a lot of Sex and the City.
Straight off the bat, man. Stop it. A few minutes in.
So even before we, even before you listen to this, you'll be wondering why did they have to call it Oz HBO, and this is us. Yeah. Is because Podbean, where we put the podcast up, won't allow an episode to be called anything less than four letters.
Yeah.
So we'll have Oz brackets HBO, just in case anybody's getting really anally retentive about it and going, why'd they do it?
Anally retentive.
Stop it.
Can't stop it.
yeah. So Oz, short for Oswald Penitentiary.
Yep.
Fictional prison. And the entire thing is based within the prison facility.
Mm-hmm. We focus primarily on Emerald City within Oz.
Yes.
Which is an experimental wing.
Yeah. Worked well for TV, didn't it?
It worked well for TV, but highly ineffective.
Yes.
Like, I don't think once anybody shows any repentance or remorse or anyone finds their ways. And, you know,
You'd almost think they kept it open like that just for, like, there was a TV show or something.
Arthur Hanlon's every 3 seconds. There's an entire season where they're promised that there's going to be no violence. I think there's violence every day.
Every day.
Every day.
I've never seen as many deaths in a show since.
I know.
And to sort of give the reason what we're saying, M City, why it's different than anything else, is that obviously it's the green floor and stuff, so the emerald mm-hmm. floor. But it's open plan. In that sense, so yes. All the sort of cells are facing each other. It's in the round, and it's kind of got a youth club vibe.
It is no,
a pretty bad youth club.
It's an awful,
but the pool table and things, you know, and they're all sitting around and they have their communal watching TV together with their headphones and stuff. So there is that sort of, but it has to have that for the TV show to work.
You know, it was shot in a biscuit factory.
Oh,
that was previously the main biscuit factory in New York that made Oreos.
Well, there you are.
So the mixing of the black and white.
Mm. Fantastic. Everything's there. Everything you need is right here today, ladies and gentlemen. So we have, talk back to the year. First broadcast when?
97.
97. And I remember it here. No, I didn't get to season one, maybe, but I think I joined two or three because everybody was talking about it.
Everybody was talking about it, but I didn't hear about it in the slightest.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Cormac, one summer night, me and Cormac sitting, watching the shite on the TV, up way past bedtime, as usual, as you do in the summer when you're off school. And this show comes on. Right. And we're thinking, it's an American show. Must be good oil. And the ferocity of the male rape that proceeded for the next hour. It was jaw-dropping and bewildering that even the next day we were still going, there was quite a lot of boys killed, but why did everybody have to have sex with everybody? And the violence sort of took a back seat.
Yes.
Like, you didn't really care about it through down the elevator shaft and all.
There wasn't a lot of, like, this is not to be homophobic, but there wasn't a lot of thought of that when you were 15 or 16 in Tyrone. There wasn't a lot of thought of any form of anal rape. Let's be honest.
No.
It just wasn't in my psyche anyway. So
no, not all of it's rape.
No, but I think that...
Some of it is consensual.
I think... Yeah,
and I promise we're not going to talk about this a lot, and we're going to jump to the characters and all the... But...
The consensual, consensual I can live with. It's the real ones I couldn't.
All of it was difficult for me at 15, 16.
I like the way you replace hard there with difficult. You were very, very on the ball there.
On the ball! It can't end.
Yeah, so this is what happens when you put two men in a room. Imagine what you put 42 men into a area. And
yeah, and like you say, it's open plan. Even the laundry room has a big open window so everybody can see what everybody's doing.
Yeah.
It's not like anything's hidden at all.
And yet, there's still a lot of sneakery going on.
Skullduggery.
And that's a sort of, I suppose, gives it the edge then in that you don't know what's going to happen in the show. Straight off the bat, I mean, it plays with your emotions in regards to we start off, I suppose, with our first focus of attention, which is a prisoner come in, Tobias Beecher.
Yes.
And I suppose it kind of reminded you a wee bit of Andy Dufresne.
Mm-hmm.
And Michelle Shank, yeah. Sort of a straight-laced, I think he was an accountant or something maybe. And
yes,
he killed a child.
As a
drunk driver.
Was he a solicitor? Was he?
Might have been a solicitor. Maybe I don't remember his profession. But so, yeah, as a drunk driver, then he was sentenced, and this is him coming in. So you're starting to see. I think the audience, when you first turn this on, the very first episode, I think the audience is Beecher.
Yeah.
You know, you're coming in this going, oh, okay, I don't know what's going on. I'm out of my comfort zone.
Totally.
I
was just eating like a box of Pringles and having like kind of Coke or something, and then it all went boogaloo. I haven't been the same since.
And like that, then we get to meet. Beecher gets to meet a friend and a confidant because he's been told by other people that he may be attacked or raped or whatever.
Yes.
But thankfully, Vern Schillinger has offered his services to help him and protect. Vern's basically the head of the white supremacists, the sort of...
The Aryan Brotherhood.
The Aryan Brotherhood, the neo-Nazis, and the as yet unknown J.K. Simmons at that time had only just come straight off theatre.
Yeah, so we'll actually do a wee bit of history of the show. Tom Fontana, writer, creator, he'd been working exclusively with David Simon from The Wire and a lot of our old... We've talked about a lot of them in The Wire episode that we covered.
Mm-hmm.
He was working on Homicide, Life on the Street.
Oh, yeah.
Which is based on the book David Simon wrote about, which led to The Wire.
Mm-hmm.
And he then proposed to the head of HBO... We can see all these shows and all these episodes where there's a criminal conviction. There's a case, there's a conviction, but we never see what happens after. And we rarely see that there's what goes on, you know, the warts and all, so to speak, we've already mentioned. So the head of HBO is a guy called Chris Albrecht. And he said, and this is a quote from him, he had great success with prison documentaries. So why not?
Why not?
Nobody told Chris that they don't show you all the stuff in the prison documentaries.
Yeah.
Especially the stuff that we get to see in Oz.
Mm-hmm.
So he felt that Fontana couldn't believe that this was happening. So then he had the gargantuan task of trying to cast this fucking thing.
Yeah.
Which, as you said, there's 40, 50, 60 different directions, different characters, different... And they all have a part to play.
They all play, yeah. And it's the interweaving of them all is the impressive bit about it. And the character sort of dynamics, it has to be... You have to balance it out, you know, they can't all be cliche, so it was a heady task for them at the start, but again, it helps when you have a decent cast.
It does, and again, we have to do another shout out to the casting directors, whoever got this nailed it, because every single one is as intriguing as the one before.
Yeah.
There's some characters who turn up in this who are actual ex-convicts and aren't actors.
Yeah.
And they're just sort of background characters. But at certain points, as this show got bigger and bigger, obviously people spotted that the actors were incredible.
Mm-hmm.
The likes of Edie Falco.
Yeah, well, we could we should talk about that. I mean, the legacy of Oz, before we even get into the depth of it. I mean, the it's one of those ones, if you haven't watched Oz, but you're into watching, you know, obviously box sets and TV shows, watch it now and you'll be going, oh, there's your man or there's your woman. And that's,
yeah.
Everybody has been drawn to something bigger or better and some massive TV shows from, obviously, Edie Falco with Sopranos.
I have a list here of just the characters from The Wire.
Okay.
Right. So, Bodie's in it.
Mm-hmm.
Herc's in it. Cheese is in it, Method Man.
Mm-hmm.
Cedric Daniels is in it.
That's right.
Carver's in it. Avon Barksdale's in it. Rawls is in it. Freeman, Elvin Burrell, Norman Wilson, Christoph Kreutzer, Brianna Barksdale, and Brother Muzzone are all in Oz.
All of them in it, yeah. And it's...
And that's not just HBO. That's because of Fontana.
Yeah.
And his link with all these great actors. The Lee Turkson, who you were talking about, Beecher, they actually became friends before, well before Oz. And he met him because he was a waiter in a diner in New York. And when Fontana was moving to Los Angeles, he said to Lee Turkson, would you mind flying to LA and helping me move? And he was like, yeah, no problem. So he like put his waiting job on hold. He was also a theater actor, obviously. Mm-hmm. He's very, very good. He then got a job in a diner in LA to raise cash to fly back to New York and get back to his work. And he was working in this diner and a talent agent spotted him. He goes, you know, you have a very strong New York accent. Like, have you been here long? And he goes, no, I've actually only been here a week or so. And he goes, all right. And they were just talking casually. And he goes, so what are you, what brought you out here? And he goes, actually, I'm working with Tom Fontana. He's working with HBO at the minute. And he goes, all right, very good. So you're an actor? He says, yeah. He says, oh, I'm casting for a film right now. And he's like, all right, Brent. Point Break.
That's right.
And he's in Point Break as Rosie, remember?
That's right.
So he got the role.
That's
stayed in LA. Like
the literal Hollywood story.
Oh, unbelievable.
Been discovered waiting tables.
Waiting tables.
Yeah, and I mean, J.K. Simmons, like we mentioned, who obviously went on then to just anything and everything.
Everything. And so everything many. He's good in. You know, he's so good that in his Wikipedia bio, the opening paragraph doesn't even mention he won an Oscar.
Yeah, there's so
because he's so good in so many things.
So yeah, you get the Oscar for Whiplash.
Whiplash.
Which was an amazing show. We'll probably come up on that at some point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, even like this, I suppose the blockbuster, like the Spider-Man, playing the head of the newspaper. What do you call him again?
Yeah, the editor.
I can't remember his name. But yeah, so J.K. Simmons did really well in this, but he was found by Fontana because he was performing on Broadway.
Uh-huh. Most of these are theater actors.
Fontana had seen him on a play. There's a recent recent interview roundtable where he's talking, must have been within the last 2 years, because he's talking about his new show counterpart.
Okay.
Where he said, just obviously, all hail Tom Fontana, because his whole career is based on.
And this is the worst part of it, not the worst, but you know, understandably, usually we have some great tales about behind the scenes stuff. Every single person who worked on Oz does nothing but speak highly about Oz. The other actors they work with, writers and directors, They can't say more good things. And like you said, that goes to all the way from guys who never acted again to the J.K. Simmons and Edie Falcos who won award after award after award after this. So it is one of those shows where you could tell they were having a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And you talked about that, actually, and that thing about the camaraderie and the family sort of forming, as it would do over most TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if they're unknowns coming into a hit, that changes everything. They're becoming famous together.
Yeah.
You know, so that was a...
Well, Simmons was on Homicide as well. He played a neo-Nazi, so this was a no-brainer. An easy one to get into that one. Edie Falco was on Homicide as well, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's where Fontana met her first as well.
Right.
Mm.
Well, I mean, like I said, Beecher is kind of our the audience's sort of glimpse in, but all throughout every episode, we're guided by Augustus Hill.
Yeah.
Played by Harold Perrineau. And again, from The Matrix and Lost as well, yeah.
I didn't know the weird thing about Oz. He went on a big tirade about being fired from Lost for racial reasons.
Right.
When in fact his character was just killed off.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He wrote a song about it. There's a song on YouTube. It's awful.
We're not going to look at
it. No.
Yeah, so Augustus Hill is a wheelchair-bound prisoner.
Yes.
Played by Harold Perrineau, who is kind of he's the narrator, but he also is the sort of the conscience then of Oz. He's guiding us through.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, this is down the tantamount to the good writing, but some of the monologues are unreal. They're massive.
Some of them are unreal.
Some of them are terrible.
Some of them are terrible. They're called Greek chorus monologues. Uh-huh. And that's to add the whole Shakespearean level of what this show's about.
Yes. It does. I mean, some of them are actually quite scary how in 1987, some of the monologues are still very relevant in 2020.
Yes.
Especially in regards to race and division and stuff. So we've got a clip here from Augustus guiding us through.
There's a common thread. He'll start the monologue with some specific topic, and then he'll cut in 2 to 3 times during the episode, and it'll always be relevant to what he was talking about at the start. But this is the last part of a speech he's talking about with regards to Napoleon.
Or it's not.
Or maybe Napoleon died a bit too early, didn't he?
When Napoleon died in exile, the doctors cut off his dick. They put his dick in an ornate box and gave it to his priest. Don't ask me why. Over the years, Napoleon's dick was sold and sold again to the highest bidder. To this day, at least 3 people claim to own Napoleon's dick. But you see, it's not important who owns the real dick. The big question is, well, who the fuck do those other 2 dicks belong to?
Yeah,
that's the big question.
That is the big question.
Doesn't matter who owns the big dick.
Fontana himself said, the reason that the monologues happen is because in prison, guys aren't that forthcoming about what they think and what they feel, because that leaves them open to attack. So my thought was just to let someone articulate all the craziness at the start.
Mm-hmm.
And it works.
It does. And it's a nice, sometimes it's a nice refreshing to hear his voice come back in again, considering some of the scenes that happen. But he's in a, sometimes he's in a perspex box, like a clear perspex, and he sort of, sometimes he's just spun around and there's a camera, you know, there's a lot of camera tricks. And for 1987, that was pretty advanced.
Mm-hmm.
The rest then is very, almost formulaic in regards to the camera.
Yeah. Do you know this is the first hour-long cable show?
Oh, was it?
This is the first one.
Right.
So it all starts from here.
Well, this is what we had talked about in the Sopranos episode. There would be no Sopranos without Oz.
No, definitely.
No Wire without Oz. You know, I don't think the box set sort of fever would have kicked on because HBO, obviously, with Sex and the City had, and with this, they're really hitting the adult market, which, to be honest with you, nothing before that was as risque, shall we say, especially in the sex end of things.
I remember there being an episode of NYPD Blue where they had to discuss a man who'd been accused of child molestation. Uh-huh. And it was the biggest episode of a TV show ever. But it was because of the subject matter being so unique.
And taboo, yeah.
Oz just fucking threw that book out the window. Like, from minute one, you're going, nothing is untouched here.
Nothing, yeah.
A child gets kidnapped, their hand taken off, and then killed.
Yeah.
You see none of it, obviously, because it's outside of the prison. But it's just discussed, like, oh, well,
yeah,
stuff happens, you know?
That's just a Tuesday.
You're going, you know, Jesus Christ, can you imagine if that wasn't fucking NYPD Blue?
Yeah, and so it was I think that's why, obviously, in the UK and Ireland, it had to be, like, I think it was 11:30 at night.
It was really, really late. Really late, and we were watching it, aren't we?
Channel 4, I do believe, yeah. And so, yes, the sort of, we beat about the bush long enough there. I mean, one of the very first things in the first episode you'll see, obviously, is the audience, like I say, is Tobias Beecher.
Yeah.
And kind of like Tobias Beecher, the audience kind of gets fucking torn apart as season goes on.
Yeah.
Because poor Tobias then is obviously, well, not spoiler for anybody, but he's corrupted, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting journey throughout it all too, because you've got this straight-laced character coming in, professional, has a career, family. And he then, he goes into the depths of despair. I mean, because obviously he's been raped and he's been attacked, and he becomes basically
a lapdog.
A lapdog. I don't know what the actual, I can't remember the term. They don't say the prison bitch. That didn't come into later years, but there's a term they use, and it's not, I can't remember, it's not queen or something, but there's a term they use for somebody who becomes the bitch or the sort of dog of somebody that's in
Well, they're fresh control. Fish at the start, aren't they? But then they're turned into something else. Yeah, and that's what you're...
There's an actual name for the ones, but yeah. You remember the two, later on in the seasons, there's two young sort of college guys coming in, football jocks, who'd done something wrong, whatever, and both of them end up becoming this... I can't remember what it is. It's not a...
it's not sissies, is it?
No, no, no. It's not. It's not a term you would normally use. It was a prison slang for it. That's memory for you.
There you go.
So now you're going to have to watch it to find out what it is. But to see that sort of... Especially when you were 15 or 16, like I was watching it, and to see these... Number one, these men being raped, and them being forced to wear makeup and forced to dress against their will and stuff. There was a lot of fucking...
Yeah.
A lot of scary things in that. You know, if you were when you were young watching, I'm sure adults had the same fear, but especially when you're young and you're here and you didn't... The thought had never entered your mind before.
No, that was a possibility, that someone would put someone else through that.
Yeah, and for... Because we had seen maybe, I think in the past, I don't know when's the first time I would have seen it, but there was always sort of the... if you want to say the transvestite or transgendered, somebody in a prison, there was always that cliche of...
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But you never actually seen somebody being forced to do it.
No.
You know, somebody straight who had no interest in doing it but was being physically and abused, assaulted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, fuck, now that's a scary concept.
And everybody else just letting it happen.
Yeah.
Prison guards, other prisoners just letting it happen. Yeah. Just to get along, because they don't want it to happen to them.
Yeah, and I mean, I've referenced them already, but sort of the Shawshank link then with Beecher. I mean, obviously, remember the famous scene we've talked about in the episode of the boys, the sisters, coming to rape Andy Dufresne. It was very visceral. Like, it was very hard-hitting.
Yeah.
So to see this in Oz initially, I was like, oh, Jesus. By the time season three came...
Oh, no.
I was
if it didn't happen, I was... Oh, God, forgive us. It's TV, though. It's not real.
It's not real. I kind of got used to it, you know.
You know what, Mommy? Nobody's got bummed this season yet. That's true, Ronan. God.
Between getting raped and shivved or shanked, I mean, a lot of stabbings. And this is what we're talking about in this, about the characters.
Fuck, I guess just can't. Just I'm trying my best to just get away from it, and I cannot get away from it.
Just keeps coming and coming. And so you've got obviously the sexual tension that happens in the prison. Again, it's the first time it's really been investigated or gone into any depth. Because you've got a couple of female characters. We mentioned Edie Falco.
Yep.
We also have the doctor, the medical, who was also in... Ended up in Dexter.
That's right. She was in Dexter.
She was in Dexter, and so was the other guy from Dexter. The
Gloria Nathan.
Gloria Nathan, and the other, the head of the Spanish contingency. He became a cop in Dexter as well.
That's right.
But yeah, so you've got her, and then you've got in some later seasons, you've got a female prison guard.
Mm-hmm. Who is a piece of work?
Who
is a big shitehead?
Big shitehead who rapes men, technically.
Yeah, the script gets flipped.
It's going to be a bit strange. A lot of rape going on.
Fierce
rape. But again, some of the things you don't think about, obviously, because you're not in prison, but it's amazing the lengths a prisoner would go to get drugs or and the things they would, how easy it is to stab somebody for a bit of drugs or for a bit of money or whatever the case may be. The amount of fucking stabbings is unbelievable.
It's Shank City.
And that's why it's not like any other TV show, because you genuinely don't know when your favourite character is going to be taken out.
Oh, yeah.
It could be gone.
Oh, absolutely.
And there's no, like, sort of, no that loyalty you get going, oh, well, he's a big star, so we can't get rid of him. Didn't matter.
No.
Anybody could go.
Well, a lot of people just disappeared because they were getting bigger on other shows.
Mm.
Some people were simultaneously on another show, like... your guy that played Chris Keller, Christopher Maloney,
yes.
He was on NCIS Special Victims Unit, and he was a main character in it, as he was a guest star recurring character in this. So some of them just did both jobs.
And very well, too.
And very well.
Because
Edie Falco would only turn up on the phone. Remember, she was ringing through. But she was at the time, like, season two of The Sopranos.
Yeah.
So she was, you know, she was going through the roof with that.
And...
Louise Guzman turns up.
Louise Guzman in the middle of her two.
And you're just going, Matey, he's going to be late. And then he's gone.
Harold Perrineau, I know J.K. Simmons mentioned in that thing about when they were recording Oz, it was a family thing we talked about, but they were also so supportive of each other that they were taking breaks because he got the opportunity to do The Matrix.
Yes.
And so everybody was like, go and do The Matrix and go and do, you know, and we'll work around you. And so that was a good thing that they had that community, but there's very few other shows would give that grace. No. And I think, especially as time went on, because it became a tighter business and it became bigger budgets, obviously, by the time we get to Game of Thrones, you're talking, you know, £1 million fucking episodes, or £10 million episodes.
Mm-hmm.
This was relatively cheap.
Yeah, one set.
If you took the first episode of Oz to the last episode of Game of Thrones as HBO's journey, I mean, oh my God. Oz, you still have to watch in 4:3. Just because of nobody's. I don't know why they haven't done that yet.
Update the ratio. I don't think it's even out in Blu-ray, is it?
I think so.
It's just a DVD box set. Yeah.
Because I know, obviously, they did it with the likes of Friends and stuff. They give it the full HD turnover.
Upscale.
But, so hopefully someday they'll do that.
Maybe not. Maybe.
Or maybe not. Yeah. It does.
I don't want to see it in greater detail.
Yeah, I don't even want to see Adebisi in 4K.
I don't need it.
So Adebisi is probably the head dog of the prison.
For two or three different times. He's
played by Adebisi.
It's not even being racist. Trying to. You couldn't. Adewale Akinoye Adebisi.
I can know you, but I never like you.
Adewale Akinoye. And that, again, I'm trying, but...
I just call him Triple A.
Also, another English actor, as well as Kareem Saeed.
Yes.
Kareem Saeed was very popular from The Bill.
Yes, The Bill.
That's right. I don't know how. There was a crime and punishment TV show that was on in America. Tom Fontana couldn't find his Kareem Saeed, and he was speaking to the showrunner for this show, and the girl goes, I've got the guy for you. So she was watching The Bill, and then said, I'll get him over to you in the morning. He was like, brilliant. Where's he driving from? He was like, London. He flew over that night. Jeez. Auditioned, got her.
Mighty.
Bang. And he's amazing. That's like,
he's absolutely first class. Because, I mean, Adebisi is sort of the...
Eamon Walker.
Adebisi is the head of, I suppose, the black community in that sense, except for the ones who are Muslim.
Yeah.
Because Saeed will be the head of theirs. Verin Schillinger is the head of the Aryan Brotherhood. You've got...
the Latinos.
Latinos is Morales.
It's Morales. It's Luis Guzman. It's Morales. It's Alvarez. It's...
So throughout each of those different communities, and this is the key thing, obviously, which every prison drama talks about, is how every community stays together.
Yes.
Whites stay with whites. Mm-hmm. Blacks stay together. Hispanics stay together. And then you've got the other wee odd characters, the old boys. Agamemnon.
Boots Malice.
And Boots Malice, yeah. And Ribido. And one, so poor Agamemnon just keeps digging holes,
going nowhere. He gets caught like
a couple of times,
a few years before Alvarez gets caught, and they left at the same time.
So everything goes on in the middle of this. You've got a load of because it's a TV show, obviously, a load of storylines that continue on. But it is kind of one of those shows where you could drop in. It's not a standalone episode. You would need to know the backdrop. But if you've seen it, you know, like ourselves, if you've seen it the one time, you don't mind when you drop back in again.
No.
Because every season has its own sort of poignant moment, you know, everything. And it did get better. And unlike some of the seasons we talk about on here, it didn't get any worse.
No.
It got a wee bit more far-fetched.
Playful. There's playful, a musical episode. Better word for
it. Yeah, there was a musical.
Which we'll broach on. But the musical episode was the first time that had ever been done on TV. And then... Buffy and Scrubs and the whole lot went That's on right, to they all do did their thing, version of it.
So I mean, well, some of the things that happen in this, and there's very few overlap from the outside. You've got obviously the visitation room. Conjugal visits are not allowed.
Not allowed.
No need for them.
No need. We'll not say why. Again.
Schillinger is the sort of, as I said, the head of the Aryan Brotherhood, played by J.K. Simmons, who. I love the paranoia of him.
Yeah.
And I think that's obviously what they wanted to point across, is that you think you're the white supremacist and you're all supreme, but your fucking head's fried with the fear of you know, what's going on. We have a scene here where basically Curtis the Pimp.
turns up. Master P turns up as Curtis the Pimp for no reason. He's never been in it before. No. We don't see him. And he turns up just to
delivers the greatest bombshell that could ever be delivered.
Basically, Schillinger's, both his sons have been killed. And his daughter-in-law has informed him she's having a child. She has the child. And he's speaking glowingly as the loving grandfather about this child.
And she's real cute.
Name's Jewel.
Jewel? Sure as I hope the other kids don't nickname her Jew.
Yo, you challenging?
Schillinger.
All right. I knew your son, Hank.
You knew my son.
I heard you're a fucking pimp.
And proud of it, Wardy. My girls are the finest on the strip.
And my son?
Short on some cash. Wanted to rent out his girlfriend.
All right, look.
Casey, Carrie, something like that. Cute little blind.
You fucking liar.
Wait a minute, Chief. I don't want no trouble. But fuck, I thought you knew Hank pimped that bitch. Even a couple of the brothers hit it. I'm surprised that baby ain't come out golden brown.
Red rag to a bull, always. Ladies and gentlemen. Red rag to a bull.
And then he goes on the rampage with pure insecurity and doubt. And this is further on. This is later seasons.
Yeah.
He also actually goes for some... He goes for a little bit of counselling, a little bit of maybe love and guidance and support mm-hmm. from Luke mm-hmm. Perry.
From Luke Perry. But again, that doesn't come to anything either.
Good old Luke. Who did, in fairness, did a great job on it. So he plays
Later on. He's well into the season 4 or 5 maybe, and he does a great job.
Like a pastor, I suppose, more than the priest or anything like that. But so the religion comes into all this as well, because you've got those divides.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you've got the drug divide, those who take and those who don't.
God.
Very strange thing that they're called tits.
Bag of drugs is called tits.
Yeah.
Any tits. What's your problem with
that? And like, the problem I would have is that I have in my lifetime said, I need tits.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a pair. And but the whole way through Oz, I could never take it seriously.
I know.
And I mean,
because a boy comes, there's a scene where a guy's in fresh and they're doing like a documentary filming.
That's right.
And this boy comes in and clearly he's wired. He hasn't had drugs in a while. And he comes up to Ryan O'Reilly, who we will speak about. Ryan O'Reilly walks into his, he goes, hey man, have you any tits? Now, every time I'm like, why that word?
Why they picked that for a thing? So yeah, if you're going to buy a wee bump, a wee wrap, you just need some tits.
Tits?
Got any tits? And the selling of the drugs then obviously leads in, as you would nearly imagine, they're cliched now, leads into them being blackmailed and used, and the higher powers up use them for shanking, shiving, and stabbing mm-hmm. people, just to get their fix and stuff. So again, a lot of social issues on it. I mean, if you, again, back to the whole thing of Tobias Beecher, I mean, his journey of becoming addicted to drugs, becoming homosexual,
yes,
for somebody who came in heterosexual to turn up to eventually fall in love with a man,
mm-hmm.
So a lot of social sort of themes running through the whole thing that HBO have sort of, it's become their forte, hasn't it, really? I mean, apart from Game of Thrones, but even Game of Thrones had underlying themes and all.
So many TV shows, because of Oz, and I've said this before to my brother, I think Oz basically created TV networks. The likes of FX and all those.
Showtime.
Sons of Anarchy. Yeah. You know, all those, they all came out of the balls that Oz has to do whatever they wanted to do.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe some sociologists somewhere along the line will look into what was changing at that time.
Mm-hmm.
What was given the freedom to television networks, as you call it, to have the balls. Did they sense what was going on around a society and in a society that's becoming more lax in regards to language and sex mm-hmm. and TV and nudity and all those sort of things? Things that you would have had censored out of TV were not being censored, but in order to watch it, you had to be up to 11:30 at night.
Yeah.
You know, there's no Sky Plus, there's none of that
sort of thing. No.
Unless you had a, what do you call it, the type in the code? TV the, Plus? No.
The Video Plus?
Video Plus.
You remember that shit?
Oh.
You remember that? In the newspaper and all?
Typing a 9-digit code.
The code at the bottom? You type her in, the fucking thing would record 9 minutes into the show and would fucking cut off before the end. What a pile of shit. Right, kids, this is a wee lesson, right? No way when you have your Sky HD now or your Sky Q and you hit record and it gives you like the 2 minutes before the show and the 2 minutes after. We had an advanced technology called Video Plus where you had to get a number, 9-digit number, whatever
from the
it was,
paper.
From the paper.
Yeah, you couldn't go on
the If you didn't have the TV Guide, the Radio Times, or the paper, you wouldn't get that code. That would match in with your video player. Now, I know it's going to a bit fast, fees, but slow down. You would then type the fucking number in, and the whore's bastard and thing would record 10 minutes into the program and cut off the last 10 minutes. So if you recorded Coronation Street, you only got 11 minutes.
And well, at least Coronation Street was one of those ones, whenever you were on a cliffhanger and just stopped dead.
Do you remember Match of the Day? And if you were the first game, you missed it in Video Plus? Oh, boys.
Children do not know they're living today. Baldy.
I'm living a baldy.
So that was the reason why it was on so late at night, and that's why a lot of people missed it. Mm. It never really got, because Sopranos, I would say The Wire, but The Wire, Sopranos, Dexter, all those sort of things all kicked off. Nobody really went back to Oz because it didn't get the sort of, as you say, the remastered version. It didn't get the full box set makeover as such, if you want to call it that. It kind of just got left behind.
Mm.
Everything else got rewatched and everything else got looked at, but Oz got kind of left behind. And just because it wasn't a TV success at the time.
No.
And whereas Sopranos and they're all big, massive TVs, big following each week, they weren't, so they got left behind. And I always regretted that, and I thought a lot of people missed out on some really good TV and can genuinely look back and go, fuck, that's where that was born.
Now, this is the originator. Without a shadow of a doubt, it starts here. HBO, the world of HBO starts here. Like the way TV is now starts here.
OG, not OZ.
Hey.
No, that's
too Video bad. Plus, OG. Jesus, we're really hitting the numbers for 2021 now. Did podcast start in 1985?
Was it? I was calling it 2020 there. That's right, the year changed the world. December. Did it?
No, don't be
This dumb. Could be 2018. If you're listening to this, you don't know.
Well, the way we're chatting, it could be 1988, to be fair. Nobody's really even noticed the difference. Video Plus is still a thing.
And we're laughing at bum sex. So it could be 1988. It could be 1988. What we do, that's what we do when we come into this room. We just
regress
back and imagine ourselves.
This isn't
watching.
A progressive room.
No.
It's a regressive
it's
room.
It's a regressive at all times. The like good thing said, about Schillinger is
like you're saying now, Schillinger.
Yes,
that's
I
not,
love it. That's only because that's been drummed into me from watching the fucking show.
He doesn't like you people pronouncing his name, and it's a running joke through the entire 6 seasons where he has to constantly correct people.
I think we have a wee compilation of every time, and that's what I love about it. No matter how many new characters come in, because if you were to look at it, you would say it's either Schillinger or Schillinger or whatever, but it's Schillinger. So,
so you got a smoke? You
Schillinger?
Schillinger. Yeah.
Hello, Richie.
Nothing for you today. Guess all your little fag friends are too busy getting their legs waxed.
Fuck you, Schillinger.
Schillinger, asshole.
Hey. What do you want, Schillinger?
Schillinger.
Hey, Schillinger.
Schillinger.
Sorry.
Yo, you challenging? Schillinger. All right.
Come on, Schillinger.
Schillinger! Just move the fuck on. Time you knew you might be getting out.
All right, Schillinger.
Schillinger! God damn it! Schillinger! I've been here 9 fucking years. You think you'd learn how to say my goddamn name?
Boys, not. Well, listen, you know, it's stressful being the head of the Aryan Brotherhood.
Stressful, man. He get pooped on too, remember? Right.
So much crazy shit has happened in this TV show.
Crazy shit.
Now, I mean, one of the things I loved about it was we always get a wee nod. You know, you never know when we Northern Ireland
Well, from early on,
would pop up.
We're told that there's also the Irish gangs in here, but we found out it's just Ryan O'Reilly and his brother Cyril. It's not a gang. It's just them two. But they are. Ryan O'Reilly is the thriftiest boy who's sneaking. Ever walked the earth. He is sneaking about behind all boys.
But he is, as they call him, he's the Irish guy. And
he's Dean Winters.
I remember having a conversation with, obviously, my family in America and speaking to them. And, they have a lot of, they live in Indiana where Notre Dame is. So there's a lot of fighting Irish and all that sort of stuff. So Irish-American things have always been there. But I remember going over to Bangor, Maine. For a project, and we were staying there, and all these guys, we met up in this group, and first night, all of them were like, "Oh, we can't wait for you to meet Megan. She's Irish." And I was like, "Oh, holy fuck! What? Like, where about you? That's brilliant." And we there was about 10 of us in the group. We're like, "Oh, I wonder who Megan is. Where's she from? Blah blah." And out comes this American girl called Megan. Oh my god!
Oh fuck!
I'm with my Irish friend. And then we had to let her down gently.
Oh fuck! Was she one of those mommy's, daddy's, cousins, brother from Cork?
Yeah. 11% Irish or something.
11%?
Something weird.
You can't claim an 11%. What was the rest? Was America?
She took no. There was Indian. There was everything in it. I don't know.
There was one that was a majority and it wasn't Irish. No. So did you claim to be all of them? Fuck no.
It was a very weird. So that was my first realization that they do, because they have to label themselves over there in America, they always have a label that the Irish are. But they're third generation or fourth generation Irish.
Yeah, but and sometimes it's nice. Sometimes there is a direct, Da came over here in the 60s. Yeah. We're basically, and you're like, no bother at all.
Yeah.
They even have a bit of the accent. That's fair enough.
Plastic patties we can deal with.
Yes.
But three generations away is just a bit much. And the problem is, too, that the Irish in America are, and that's what we learned when we went over to Bangor, was the people were really worried that we were coming.
Oh, they were?
When we went over to that for that project, they were really worried that
You're about you? I mean the Irish and
in Irish in general, they were worried about.
I was not, but just you.
Yeah, for us, no, they were worried. They told us that they went over because in America, the Irish are the most racist people.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And we had a hard time explaining to them, going, they're not Irish. Mm. They're your friend. They're your fellow countrymen. They're nothing to do with us. But extremely racist. And I suppose if you look back into the history of, there's a great book, How the Irish Became White.
Aye.
It's a great story of, basically they realized that if they just treated black people bad, they could blend in well with the existing Yanks.
Yeah.
And that's it all.
Because they were, it was no blacks, no dogs, no Irish.
Yeah.
That's how Irish America dealt with that, by becoming more racist than the most racist American conservative could be.
Yeah. They fit it in, and that's how they blended in. Now, Ryan O'Reilly has continued on that tradition.
He's right in there.
He is.
The apple didn't fall too far from the tree.
There's only a white sheet missing. That's the only thing. So he is sneaky. He's always whispering in somebody's ear. Mm-hmm. He's always scheming at something, and he's a dangerous fuck because he would just... Well, he won't stab you, but I guess somebody else will stab you in a heartbeat.
He's the Loki of this universe.
Yes, that's what he is, exactly.
The God of Mischief.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Who also then, in a couple of seasons in, as you mentioned, he is joined by his brother, Cyril.
Who is there because he got Cyril to kill the husband of the... Doctor.
Yes.
It's fucking show.
And Cyril is borderline special needs.
Yes.
It's his actual
brother.
Yes, his actual life brother. Who's also, how do you like them apples?
Yeah, from Good Will Hunting.
Good Will Hunting, yeah. A guy, that part I always loved. It was a weird, because do you know whenever I was first watching this, I thought it was like one of those split screen things. I thought they were both the same person.
Oh, right.
Because they look so alike and all the rest, but then, obviously, as we figured out. Cyril then...
Again, though, Tom Fontana was drinking in a bar in New York, and the two boys were working there. Right. And he had seen him in a play, and he had seen him on the set of the Mel Gibson film, the conspiracy theory one.
Right.
And he said to him, you're a good actor. And he was like, all right. And he goes, I'm actually casting for a show, if you don't mind auditioning. He goes, of course. He goes, actually, later on, we've got a... Your brother will turn up. I've got a plan for this sort of. And he goes, well, that's my brother there. He works here. He's an actor too. And he was like, oh.
No.
Right, well, that's
Fontana's been in the right place at the right time quite a few times. Red O'Reilly, then he keeps up the Irish sort of spin on it at all times.
Yes,
and you know, he'll wear like in a green jerseys and just the usual shit. Like
he chats some shit.
I can't remember the name of the actor that played him. I can't remember his name. But he went on then to Rescue Me.
Dean Winters.
He went on to
30 Rock.
30 Rock. Brilliant. 30 Rock. He's in so many things since Oz. But the Irish thing sort of gets a wee bit...
Yeah.
It gets a wee bit washed away.
Yeah, yeah.
Until season four.
So, me and Cormac again are watching. And I remember it as clear as day. I was in the bathroom. And we had taped it. Not Video Plus, because we would have missed an hour. And he was watching it in the morning. And I had a bowl of cereal. And I was walking out of the kitchen. And Cormac shouts from the living room, "Ronnie, the IRA's here." I went, "What?" And he goes, "The fucking Raz and Oz." And I went, "What? Hold on. All of them? What are you talking about?" And he goes, "No." And he rewind the tape and played her back. And all of a sudden...
So yes, we have...
We get represented again in the purse fashion.
Terrible, terrible way.
Fierce.
So a guy who is allegedly... and some in the middle of some diplomatic witting or something, whatever.
At the height of the ludicrous scenario that this is, how would he get to Emerald City? He would just be in general population. They'd just keep him in a corner. Now he's in the most dangerous part of the prison, an open plan with all these other loopies.
And what I loved about it, apart from the terrible accent, even though he's from Ireland, the guy
he's
plays
from
him
here, and he sounds like somebody who's Megan trying to do you.
I thought Brad Pitt's was bad, but this is fucking awful. But of course, then, as a fan, obviously, I mean, the North being mentioned at all is just crazy. But to watch Ryan O'Reilly then realize that he's not as Irish as maybe he may think he is, and this boy upon the place goes, "Fucking right, you're not. That's good on you. Ooh ah." And then.
This is so stupid.
It's so bad. So fucking stupid. To make I don't know if he's making a political statement, because usually that's what it's linked into it, but he decides then he's going to blow up M-City.
Yeah.
And there's a plan, and O'Reilly's involved. And it's basically, like, I suppose the class is a dissident group.
You can just operating the thought process of the guys, like, what else can we add to this? We've got everything, we've got this.
Well, they're looking at Ryan, they must have had the characters up on the wall. You can imagine the wall, a string coming to it, and every different picture coming at it, and you're going,
what can we get out of BC to do? What can we get Saeed to do? What can we get Ryan? Where more can we go with Ryan? What about the IRA? Well,
we got to we'll play a clip here of the final act of our... volunteer.
Fucking hell.
Who wants to blow up M City, and Ryan O'Reilly's there to give him a hand.
No, I'm taking this fucking bomb to the hacks.
Relax, Ryan. Took me a minute, but what you said in the cafeteria is starting to penetrate this thick skull of mine.
Yeah? Oh, Jesus, look, that's good pork, because, you know, we can still fight the good fight. We just gotta figure out a different way to do it, all right?
Be careful. Did you shut off the time delay?
I haven't done anything.
Give me it.
Oh, hey, what are you doing?
What must be done? You have 2 minutes.
No, pork!
Fuck. What's pork?
Beat it! McManus! Murphy, he's got a bomb!
Huh?
Down there, Connolly's got a bomb!
He's got a bomb! Fucking Conley's got a bomb! You've got exactly 1 minute, 30 seconds to evacuate M City!
M City. No.
So,
Porrick Conley.
Porrick.
The skitter.
Porrick Conley's got a bomb!
You have 1 minute and 30 seconds to evacuate M City. Fuck. Me.
I remember me and Cormac were watching it from behind the sofa, not for the normal reasons.
Yeah.
It was for the pure, unholy, mortifying shame of it.
The cringe factor. Oh, yes. Oh. So, as always, we love to be represented and represented well.
Misrepresentation in any American TV show. At its finest.
So, yes, I mean, Porrick Which again was just a great thing to hear in the American TV show. You never heard, where would you ever hear Park?
Park.
So Park Connolly, he wanted to blow up M City.
He's going
to
blow up M City. For I mean, nobody seems to know what
the
righteous blowing would have been for, but
it was for, you know, the good fight, as O'Reilly calls it. You know,
okay. And how was that gonna?
Yeah, that was it. So
we're not. I best not to. Don't need to go dig into this one.
So I mean, you've got then you could hear O'Reilly shouting because we haven't really covered much about the sort of the staff.
Yes,
because the staff, of the prison,
we need to talk about.
Yeah, so you have Tim McManus,
played by Terry Kinney.
Yeah, who is the architect? He's the guy that came up with the idea of M City.
Yes,
that this is this sort of political or prisoner sort of social experiment,
mm-hmm.
and he's. I suppose you would call him the mind of Oz. You know, you've got the governor, played mm-hmm. by the mighty.
Oh, you know what the best bit about this is? He's the worst actor in it.
yeah, I know.
He's the worst actor in it, and he is the number one. Like, when you turn the show on, Ernie Hudson appeared, you go, Ernie Hudson, good brother, brilliant.
So, Ernie Hudson.
And he's the worst actor in the whole show.
Ghostbusters fame is the governor, and he is terrible in it, but a good terrible.
Good terrible.
But Tim McManus is...
No, I don't mean he's bad. I mean... Everybody else is of such a high caliber character actor. He just looks like Ernie Hudson turned up.
Ernie's just
well, it's crackpot.
He's just in the office.
Ah, he's there. Just there's Ernie.
Chat to me for having her. Tim McManus then is kind of the brains of the operation. He sort of does the psychological approaches and the themes or the sort of tactics used. So
he also has a hell of a way with the ladies.
He likes a lady.
Every lady in that place he's been at.
Every time a female appears. Now, apart from the one that. No, actually,
oh, he did.
She accused him
of, you know.
Yeah, she might have actually, considering
did it,
what,
did it to him.
This is the prison guard we're talking about, she might have actually been the one who instigated it and maybe forced him. McManus, you also have then the rest of the sort of the hacks,
mm-hmm.
that's what they're called, the hacks. And it's just a sort of a mixed bag, really. They're sort of, they're not really main characters, but they are. They repeat enough times that you know them, but you also don't know much about their background or story. And that's, well, I suppose that's key. There's only a couple of ones that you do get to really find out the real lives of them.
There's three in particular I want to talk about. First one's McManus.
Yeah.
You know, he's the guy who founded the Steppenwolf Theatre Company with John Malkovich.
Oh.
He's that guy. He was also married to Elizabeth Perkins. Remember the girl from Pink?
Mm-hmm.
They got divorced, and then he remarried Catherine Irby, who is Shirley from Death Row in Oz. His wife is Shirley from Oz.
Right.
The second one to talk about is Chuck Zito. Chuck Zito is the Italian mafia head, Chucky Pancamo in this.
Mm-hmm.
He was the creator of the Hell's Angels in New York.
Right.
He was the starting member, the originator. And he also, most notably, served a bit of time for beating the shit out of Jean-Claude Van Damme in a strip club.
Oh!
JCVD was up giving it the hit, bit, chit. And Chuck Zito walked up and punched the fucking head of him.
Jean-Claude got battered.
Jean-Claude wasn't looking too good. That was in 98. He also launched a $5 million lawsuit against FX when an idea that he'd brought to them in 2006 showed up as Sons of Anarchy.
Oh.
In a truly bizarre move, he dropped the case, which he had a good chance of winning, to appear in the show in a few episodes.
Of course he did.
He was also the bodyguard for Liza Minnelli in the 80s.
What a weird
tuxedo, man. Punching out Jean-Claude and Liza Minnelli floating about and trying to sue boys. And then they go, here, tell you what, we'll give you a role in the show. And he's like, right, what does that pay? About 15 grand. I'll be like, yeah, that's more than 5 million. Chuck, you've a bad financial advisor.
Chuck, you sure Jean-Claude didn't hit you once? No.
He definitely was a wee screw loose. But the MVP of this entire show, Connor, is Sister Peter Marie.
Sister Peter Marie.
For the very simple reason that Sister Peter Marie is played by Rita Moreno. Rita Moreno is one of three people to hold one very, very special honor. Do you know what that honor is?
I do not.
She is one of three people that has an Oscar, a Grammy, a Tony, and an Emmy. The infamous EGOT.
Oh.
Rita Moreno was in The King and I, Singing in the Rain, West Side Story. Was romantically involved with Marlon Brando. A tumultuous relationship due to Marlon's infidelity and lunacy.
And butter.
When Marino became pregnant, Brando arranged for the abortion.
Of course he did.
After a botched abortion, Marino tried to commit suicide by overdosing on Marlon Brando's sleeping pills. In interviews with The Good Day LA, she said that Elvis Presley was not a good lover. They dated for quite some time, but whenever the opportunity presented itself to take the relationship to another level, she said Presley backed off like a baby brother who couldn't make an interesting conversation. Elvis.
So, a lot of reports of Elvis not working.
I heard that in the later years. So Richard Rodgers and Helen Hayes and herself are the only other people that have won all four of the Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony. And she's also one of 23 people who have achieved what is called the Triple Crown of Acting, with an individual competitive Academy, Emmy, and Tony for acting in the same year. Rita Moreno.
Sister Peter Marie is the sort of in-house nun stroke counselor stroke advisor.
She's walking in and out of being religious, and you don't really know.
Yeah, but they all call her Sister Peter Marie, but there's she's not wearing the habit or anything, but she's just, I suppose, it's on-site counselor.
Yeah.
Basically. And she does be... because the female dynamic when you're in an all male prison, you know, I thought Oz always dealt with that very well.
Yeah,
there is a threat, but there's also respect if it's gained and the work, you know, and that can happen through counseling. And she did get quite a few characters through their. She was a good tool for the writers.
Yeah, she really was.
Somebody had really went off the rails and maybe a character that you thought, it wouldn't be realistic for him to come back. She is a sort of, the rehabilitation happens through her.
Along with the priest, B.D. Wong, he sort of helps out. And they help each other too.
Yeah, and he, that was the other thing too, the Asian priest, who is, I mean, obviously you'll see him now, and he's in loads of things.
He's in quite a few.
Everything, yeah. He played a regular part, but I mean, again, they go into that sort of almost like a political, social theme where which religion can help you the best, you know. So it's that kind of gets dealt with, but you know, you've got obviously the Islam, you've got the Sister Peter Marie and the priest together, but then you've got the likes of the pastors coming in, and this more like saved Christians, if you want to call it that. So, and then how do they work against each other? You can also, you know, you can, B.D. Wong, the character, has always got sort of like a, not an insecurity, but, you know, I should be helping him, not you.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing came out.
And the doubt of
that,
his own abilities and within his religion and his role in the prison.
Yeah.
And then you've got the governors coming in and, you know, the head, the warden, and that sort of social dynamic of, is there monetary reasoning for prisons? And then there's a speech member, that Augustus, one of his wee Greek chorus monologues, where he's talking about prisons in America.
And the cost of them, or how...
And how you get more money from a census if you're in a small town that has a prison. Yeah. Because no matter how many prisoners are in there, they're counted as all living in that area.
Yeah.
When they do the census, they're not residents of where they've been, you know, their crime has been committed.
Yeah.
They're residents of where that prison is. So that area gets more money in a budgetary meeting because it says that...
They're all residents. Yeah.
They're all residents. So there's more people that live in that area.
And I love that episode where he goes through all that. So it sort of exposes the scam. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm saying about the political end of things. Like, there were, HBO never stopped doing that then. There was always wee digs of, I mean, no better example than The Wire with the sort of corruption, the backhanders and all that sort of stuff on a government level. Because quite a few times he does sort of a monologue on how the government or the prison system is scalping money.
Yep.
And that was, as you say, it was very ballsy, even never mind the content, but the sort of the themes they're going to tackle. Like, so you mentioned the musical.
Yeah.
We'll finish with that. I mean, the musical episode was just... because you've got such a...
90% of the actors, primary actors in this, are Broadway theater actors.
Yeah, and they're all excellent singers, but it's the contrast of it, because you're going from maybe a really serious stabbing into a wee number.
There's a duet between Schillinger.
I think I have a clip for it here, actually. Schillinger and Beecher. Singing together, that's so surreal. But I mean, as you say, other TV shows then, one episode, somewhere along
ran with that. They were like, we can do that?
Yeah.
And we can sort of break the fourth wall in a way and just change everything. And you're going, yeah, you're a fictional TV show. You can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, and I think this is the sort of the start of TV producers, executive producers, trusting the audience.
Yeah.
That the audience are smart enough to know. Because, I mean, let's be honest, in the 50s, 60s, I mean, it was hard to tell the difference between the TV and reality for some people.
Yeah, yeah.
But as audiences got smarter over the time, they could break that fourth wall. You could do Schillinger and Beecher having a song together and then go back the next week and they're killing each other again because the artistic licenses get granted. Would it have been granted maybe in the 80s? I don't think so.
Hard to know.
But here they are singing together after somebody just got battered.
Yep.
You creep into my heart and make my heart burn. You sneak into my mind and make my head ache. Look, it's time to face the music. Bye bye. Don't slam the door. This is the last duet, last chance to go again. No more harmony for you and me. This is the last duet. I'll never do it. Never do it. Never, ever, never, ever, never do with you.
I mean,
so
we were watching them actually laughing, watching them dance together inside the Augustus Perspex box.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we've lost a few people.
Maybe lost in the way. I mean, that was.
But
I think, and I mean, in a TV show like this, where what has happened between those two?
Yeah.
And then to see them singing that he pooped
on him.
He pooped on him.
He branded him.
He
killed his. You know, there's a lot.
A swastika on the left butt cheek would last a while.
It's not going away.
It's burned in, like. Mm. So to see them singing together, obviously, I mean, and that's what I'm talking about. That sort of creative license. They had established the characters well enough.
Mm.
Established the TV show well enough,
yeah,
that they had the freedom to go and do it.
Yeah.
And I think maybe.
Yeah, you're not doing that season one. Like.
I was just going to say, you'll never find even the other future TV shows that did it. Nobody did it in season one.
No.
Episode one. Not a chance. So, yeah. If you haven't watched it in a while, go back and get it. I don't know where you'll get it these days.
Oh, I think it's on demand now.
It's on demand on Sky, mm-hmm. I think. And the full six seasons are there. Mm-hmm. Do check it out and let us know what you think. No, I'll say let us know. Let Ronnie know what you think.
Don't. Can we draw a line under what we've spoke about? Just tell me if you like it or not. Don't. Let's not get into the details that we've tried our best to glaze over. Oh, God. Isn't that it? Oh, God. We can't.
If you have any clips of any other poignant moments like that you'd like to send to Ronan, send them on. Because, I mean, he... Adebisi lives with him, you know? It lives in his mind. And
it's just... Rooney the Raz and Oz was a relief.
Right. Thank you, as always, for listening. We will be back. We've got a couple of guests lined up this year. We have a couple of different topics. We, as always, if you could go and give us a little review or a
Did you see our latest review?
No.
Where I am referred to as much better than Michael Bartlett.
Oh.
But unfortunately, I'm also referred to as Sidekick.
Oh!
Much akin to Bartlett. So, I very much appreciate the review. Thank you very much. And he also gave us 5 stars. Thank you very, very much.
Well, I think it's the same thing that happens with our podcast, is that the 4, 3, 2, and 1 don't work.
Oh.
It's only the 5.
Top 5?
It's just a 5 button. The 5 stars, and only the 5 one works.
Right.
It's weird. It's happened to my podcast. That's a weird one.
We've still got Langer managed to break that spell.
Langer's broke a spell, but don't worry about Langer. He's all right. He came round.
Can't fucking look at that Langer.
So yes, go and leave us a review. Tell people, spread the word. You will hopefully catch up on other episodes. If it's your first time listening, go back. They're not timed. Well, they shouldn't be time stamped. There's no relevance to them unless there's a wee tangent in the middle of it that might have been topical, but they're always available to listen anytime. And thank you very much.
You have 1 minute and 30 seconds to get out of I am sorry.